Welcome, students, to another episode of the GCV Students Podcast. My name is Lindsay Hines, and I am your host and an adult leader with GCV Student Ministries. With me today, I have two students. I have Lucy.
Hi.
Representing 77 or Genesis. And Serenity.
Hi.
Is representing 77. So we've got Serenity from the high school group and Miss Lucy representing our middle school students. So how did you guys have a chance to read over Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 9?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So that is all we're going to talk about today. We're not going to talk about the entirety of chapter 11. We're just going to talk about the Tower of Babel because in the middle of chapter 11 actually starts a new story. It'll start the story of Abraham and his family. So this is kind of the last bit of the story of God and humanity that started in the garden, and it'll end at the Tower of Babel. So did you guys have any questions?
I do. I have two.
Ready.
I'll probably mess up the pronouncement, but what is a plain of Shinar?
So the plain of Shinar. A plain is just a large open area that does not have many trees. It's just open and flat. And Shinar is current day Iraq. So it was just it was a large flat plain in that area. They decided to start building the Tower of Babel. Lucy, did you have any questions?
No.
I have another one.
You had two. Yeah.
What's your other one? What do they mean by come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly?
I am so glad you asked that because we are going to talk a lot about that today. Yes. Excellent question. Okay, so if you guys don't mind, I am actually going to read you this text because it's only 9 verses. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to take up too much time. And I just want to get through the whole thing and then we'll take it just like bit by bit. So Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower the people were building. The Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so that they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them from there all over the earth, and they stopped building the city. That is why it is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. So we're going to go bit by bit here. So, folks start moving eastward. So, remember when we're going to kind of go back through the whole story because this isn't happening in a vacuum. This is 100% related to Genesis 1, 2, 3, 4, and the rest, everything else. So, folks start to move eastward towards Shinar. Remember when Adam and Eve got cast out of the garden, they went east of Eden. And then when Cain got cast out, he went east. So everyone's moving farther east, farther away from Eden, which remember means pleasure or delight. So Eden is where there is pleasure and delight in the presence of the Lord. And then as folks are moving eastward, they're farther and farther away. So the baked bricks. I know, Serenity, you asked about the baked bricks. So mud, so they're in a plain. They're on a plain, like a flat grassland. So there's not a lot of stones. There's no mountains, you know, around where normally they would be carving stone out of the mountains. Now they really just have to make mud bricks. So this was a pretty common building material in the ancient world. You know, you just take some mud, you mix some straw, and you put it in a little mold, and then you set it out until it dries and you can build a house with it. When you bake them, however, they become waterproof. So they baked the bricks to waterproof them, and they used bitumen or pitch instead of mortar. So they're using pitch. Remember when we did the Noah series, he was used pitch when he was making the ark because it would waterproof the hull of the boat. So pitch is waterproofing, and baking the bricks is also waterproofing. So let's see. Okay, so then they say, let us build. Let us build a city. So if you remember from the Cain episode, when Cain was sent out of the area where the rest of his family was living, and he built a city. We talked about how building a city in the ancient world was seen as an act of creation. So this was something that really the gods were responsible for. So just the simple fact that they're saying, come, let us build a city. They're elevating themselves, just like Cain was when he built the city and then placed his son over it. So here we are, like, we are right back where we started, where they are going to, you know, build up, they're going to build up protection. They're going to build up this tower and make a name for themselves. So the tower was probably a ziggurat. Or do you guys, are you familiar with a ziggurat? Have you ever seen like Chichen Itza or Tulum? Yes. You know, yeah. Those like pyramids that are stepped? That's a ziggurat. So it's like a stepped pyramid that has layers. Kind of like if you just put like if you had like a square of wood, and then you had a smaller square of wood that you put on top of it and a smaller one still, it would eventually make like a pyramid structure.
So it's like stairs, but in a pyramid shape, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it's just like Chichen Itza, Tulum. This is a very common like temple structure worldwide, you know, not just in the ancient Near East, but all over the world. So this was most likely a ziggurat that reaches into the heavens. So this typically referred to like some sort of temple structure. So let's stop here and just like think, okay, now that we know all these little background facts, when we see these people, and they say, come, let us build a city, and we'll put a tower in it that reaches to the heavens, and we will make a name for ourselves. What do you think their goal was?
To gain a lot of power.
Probably. Yeah.
I'm not quite sure, but somewhere along the lines of what Lucy said.
I agree. Yeah. It's because remember last time we talked about how like a central theme, which is a message or a moral that's kind of woven in through the story, was power. Who has it? How did they get it? What are they doing with it? So Lucy and Serenity, I think that you're spot on. This is about power. And this is about taking power to a level that is, we have not seen it before in the story so far. This is an even further escalation from where they were before the flood. So make a name for ourselves. Let's talk about this because I have a hypothesis, or at least just from reading the rest of the story, you know, when we see these characters like Cain, Lamech, you know, Ham, they're trying to seize power. They're taking it by force, and they're seizing power that they're really not capable of wielding in a healthy way, you know, because remember, yeah, when we were in the garden, the Lord said, you know, I give you the whole earth to rule over. And the verbs that he was using when he was telling Adam, like, this is yours to rule over, you have dominion over it, was to protect and serve. So you're supposed to protect and serve when you're in a position of power, but these rulers are not protecting and serving. As a matter of fact, it's very likely that this tower was built with forced labor, slavery, you know, like, mm-hmm. So they remember this is probably Nimrod because he established Babel. So back in chapter 10, Genesis 10:8 says, Cush was the father of Nimrod, who became a mighty warrior on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. That is why it said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. The first centers of his kingdom were in Babylon, etc. So this is probably Nimrod, who is a mighty hunter before the Lord. We talked about how that meant a king that was prone to conquest. He's conquesting. He wants the entire world united under his rule. And like, look, he's not the first ruler that has had that, you know, goal in mind. I mean, I think the one from recent history that we remember is Adolf Hitler. You know, like that was his whole thing. He wanted to, you know, kind of rule Europe, you know, and have it for the Germans. So, you know, this is also, I've got a list here of rulers who deified themselves. So the pharaohs of Egypt deified themselves going back all the way to 3150 CE to 30. So like 3,000 years, the rulers were deifying themselves, even though the gods that they were worshiping were changing all the time. They were changing, you know, pretty frequently for, you know, religion. The first Mesopotamian emperor in 2255 was deified. This is in Mesopotamia that this is happening, you know. So again, here's a little, he did set himself up as a god and they're building a temple structure. Japanese emperors were considered deities until 1945. They still believe that the emperor was like partially, you know, deified. He had supernatural powers. Chinese emperors as well. That stopped in 1911. Julius Caesar was the first Roman emperor to declare himself a deity. And the Dalai Lama in present day is considered a reincarnation of one of the Buddhas. I cannot pronounce the Buddha that they're talking about. But so we see that this is not like, this is something people do. You know, when they're in positions of power, sometimes they get drunk on it and they begin to think that they are actually gods. So we talked about Josephus last time. I want to just kind of like give a little excerpt here from what Josephus. Josephus was a historian born in Jerusalem in 37 AD. Jerusalem at that time was a Roman province. Okay, so Josephus says that God commanded them to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And that is true. He commanded it in Genesis 1:28, 8:17, 9:1, and 9:7. So remember, we were talking about when things are grouped by fours, that means like it's a symbolic way of saying this is like a totality, a completion. So the Lord did not stutter when he said, you know, and he's making sure that we know that he did not stutter. He's got it in there four times just to let us know, I'm serious about this. This is real. Go. You be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. These folks are like, no, we all want to be together with one person ruling over us that we are going to worship as a deity, you know, and he can subjugate us as much as he wants. So here's what Josephus has to say. God also commanded them to send colonies abroad for through the peopling of the earth that they for the thorough peopling of the earth that they might not raise seditions amongst themselves, but might cultivate a great part of the earth and enjoy its fruits after a plentiful manner. But they were so ill instructed that they did not obey God. When they flourished with a numerous youth, God admonished them again to send out colonies, but they, imagining the prosperity they enjoyed was not derived from the favor of God, but supposing that their own power was the proper cause of the plentiful condition they were in, did not obey him. Nay, they added to this their disobedience to the divine will, the suspicion that they were therefore ordered to send out separate colonies, that being divided asunder, they may be more easily oppressed. So not only are they not obeying God, but they believe that he's got evil intent against him, according to Josephus, who is really just writing down the oral history of the nation of Israel, you know, the people of Israel. So this isn't in the Bible, but it must have been in the zeitgeist. You know, the zeitgeist is just like the culture at large, you know. So this must be, at least at this time in 37 or 60 AD, what they believed was going on in this story. And that's kind of like why I like to look at these older references, because, you know, they were just in a totally different place and time. And sometimes I wonder if maybe our modernity kind of colors our understanding in a negative way. And I'm sure that, you know, they're modern in their time to this story as well. So Josephus goes on to say that Nimrod excited them to contempt of God, and persuaded them that it was through his, you know, strength, through their own strength, through their military strength and prowess, that they were, you know, so prosperous. So it was probably pretty easy for him to deify himself, because he's like, look at all this land, look at how well we're doing, and this is because I, you know, I have led you, and you have, you know, obeyed me, and now, so, not to put too fine upon a point on it. So, yeah, so this is, you know, in order not to be scattered, this is in direct opposition to God's plan. So then we hear that the Lord comes down. So as tall as they were building this tower,
they weren't going to reach him.
Never. Just never going to reach him. Yeah. So the Lord still came down, you know, and was like, oh no, look at what they're doing. You know, they're trying, they're going to hurt themselves. You know, this isn't okay. They're going to hurt themselves. So he confused the language, because remember, he said he wasn't ever going to flood the earth again. So he's like, okay, well, they didn't really learn from their mistakes when I flooded the earth. And now, as a matter of fact, you know, it seems like they're like directly antagonistic towards me for having done it. You know, they just did not learn the lesson. They don't understand righteousness. They're just like not picking it up. So we'll just confuse their language, and then they'll separate out into little, you know, they'll each go to their own little countries, and then everybody will be spread out, and, you know, the warring can stop. Because at this time, there's plenty of space. You know, like, you can go far enough away that you never have to be at war with anybody. You know, this is like 4,000 BC, you know, like nobody's around. So, yeah, so the Lord, you know, he's like, listen, you know, I'm going to get what I want. You know, like, this is my world, and I'm going to get what I want. So I'm just going to go ahead and confuse your language, and then this is going to take care of itself. And in fact, it did. So also, the nothing they plan to do, you know, like, I really don't think that this was the Lord saying they're getting a little too big for their britches. I think this was being built with forced labor. And I think the Lord had compassion on these workers who had to, like, you know, just literally slave away in the hot sun, building this temple to a man who is just a man. Like, he's just a man. He's mortal, you know? So the temple will survive, but he will be long gone. This also, you know, in ancient spiritual beliefs, they believed that the care that you received from the living would transfer into the afterlife. So this is kind of a little like Shinto, which is like ancestor worship, which is where, like, you know, you've got these little idols of your, you know, grandmother that passed and like all these other things, and you're providing like food and drink, you're putting coats on them so they're not cold outside, you know, like, it's a very like personifying this idol. Which is not what we're supposed to be doing. We are not supposed to be personifying idols. We are the idol personified. I am the image of God. You are the image of God. You, Lucy, image of God. We are the image bearers, so we are the idol. You know? So I think that when he says nothing they plan to do, he's talking about the harsh labor. So another thing I want to point out about this story is the come let us. The phrase come let us. Because I think it's interesting that, you know, the first time we hear this phrase, I think, is in Genesis 1:26. Let us make mankind in our image. And then we've got the ruler here who is, I'm just going to assume it's Nimrod. So we've got like Nimrod saying, let us, come, let us. So he's speaking these words of God, you know, come, let us. And so, and then God, you know, he has the last word, because his come, let us is the last come, let us, you know. So I thought that was an interesting. Are you guys doing okay? Do you have any questions?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay.
I was going to say, I think in verse 6, it says, and nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Which I think is like showing that, like, with all this power that they've like accumulated over everybody coming to this one location, the Lord recognized that they have too much. Like, it's going to go wrongly very quickly.
Yeah.
That he needs to go and do something before he's like either forgotten or just no longer matters.
Yeah. I can't remember which pope it was, but one of the popes said, absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know, so, and I think there's probably a lot of truth in that. We're just not built for that. We're not built to oppress each other. We're built to love each other and protect each other. Okay. And so that brings us, we are like at the last point of this already. I can't believe how fast this is going to be, like a 15-minute podcast this week, but it'll be fine. So the last thing I want to talk about is verses 8 and 9. And this is, I told you guys I learned a new word this week, and here it is. Epinalepsis.
What is that?
It's a figure of speech that's used in prose and poetry where a word or phrase is at the beginning and end of the sentence, usually kind of in the reverse. So an example I have here is from John F. Kennedy, who said, mankind must put an end to war or war will put an end to mankind. So it's an inversion of the phrase. So here we have one. In verse 8, so the Lord scattered them from there all over the earth. And then in verse 9, at the end, it says, from there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. So it starts and ends with like the same little phrase. And I think that's just such a nice little bookend, you know? And that's why they call this, and you know, we get that little tidbit. That's why they call it Babel, because Babel in Hebrew sounds like the word for confusion. Confusion and chaos and disarray. So, you know, the Lord, not going to let one man rule over all of us, you know, at least not that way. Now one man rules over us, you know, but that man is Jesus. And he is not an oppressive ruler. As a matter of fact, Paul tells us that he emptied himself of his divinity in order to serve us.
In verse 4, it says, let us make a name for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't ever give credit to the Lord for even creating them or anything. They're just like, let's make a name for us and us alone, because we're the only thing that's important.
Right? And we did all this. Look at what we did.
Yeah.
You know, by ourselves. So it's Philippians 2:7. Here's what Paul has to tell us. I'm going to start in Philippians 2:5. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death. So we see these rulers are doing the exact opposite of that. They are, you know, God actually, Jesus actually has power. He actually has the power, and he's decided not to wield it. He's made the decision that he's going to serve us.
Yeah.
This guy has no power. He's going to die. You know, like we all are. This guy has no power. He's got breath in his lungs. He's completely dependent on his environment. You know, like even if they built this tower and they went all the way up into the stratosphere, it's cold. There's no oxygen. They can't survive up there. So like we don't realize how fragile and delicate and fallible we are, you know, especially when we're a conquesting king that has got like, you know, money and jewels and all of this.
Yeah.
So I love that contrast, the comparison and the contrast, where here, you know, this human is deifying himself. And then in the New Testament, we have the deity in human form who is humanizing himself, you know, taking it down. So that's all I have to talk. That's all I have to tell you about the Tower of Babel and how the Lord is just trying his best with mankind, you know, like,
oh, yeah.
Just we're
chaotic.
We are chaotic. We are chaotic. Yeah. I mean, that's so true, Lucy. I'm just like thinking of my own chaos, you know, like just sitting here meditating on, You know, I am very chaotic. And I think that's part, you know, that's part of it, you know, because we're in a fallen world and we get hurt by folks. You know, you walk around the earth enough, you're going to get your heart broken a couple times.
Why would the Lord create mankind this way, like chaotic, if it's going to cause problems later? Like, would he know it's going to cause issues? Like, oh, they try to accumulate too much power? Then why would he make us that way to be able to do that? Like, why wouldn't he just, like, make that not possible?
So, okay, I got to look up another scripture. There's this part, and I can't remember what gospel it's in, but there's a deaf man. And the rabbis that are at the temple are saying, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he's deaf? And Jesus replies, neither. He's deaf so that I can, he's deaf for this moment. He's been deaf his whole life so that I can cure him in front of you. This miracle.
He has it planned out, basically.
He has a plan, yes. So we choose chaos, you know, like we don't choose it on purpose. A lot of times we're not even aware that we're making the choice. Like I said, our hearts get broken. You walk around the earth long enough, you're going to get hurt. You know, it's part of life. There's peaks and valleys, and you get hurt so that the joy is more joyful, you know. And I think we're a little chaotic because it's very, very, very important that we know that we are not powerful. We have no power. Like, the Lord wants us dependent on him. And he's a good father, so he's going to take care of everything we need. We just have to give that control over. So, like, we have it here in the Tower of Babel where they're, like, literally building a tower to the sky and they're going to deify themselves. But, like, don't we deify ourselves all the time? You know, like, don't I override the Lord all the time?
You think you do?
I definitely do. The Lord definitely tells me things and I'm like, no, thank you. You know?
Nope.
Right? So, like, my own rebellion, you know, this is just kind of an exaggeration of our small scale rebellions. And we've been talking about that all through this, you know, like when we see the tyrants, we think of, like, these large scale tyrants and how awful and why is the earth like this? The earth is like this because we all choose it, you know? Great question. What a great question. I hope that was a cogent answer. I don't know. I hope it was. Do you guys have any other questions?
No.
Do you think the languages that he scattered the people into are still around? Like, do you think they're still the same languages we speak?
I don't know.
Because I don't think it ever mentions that in the Bible. I think it just says that the languages were scattered, but I don't think it mentions what they were.
I think some of them.
Because, like, I feel like the names would be different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they wouldn't call Spanish back then.
Right, they called it Tarshish.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
It was in Spain, yeah.
Oh. Well, but still.
Yeah.
Still feel like, I don't know if they would be the same languages.
Right? So, I'm just thinking about this. I think Hebrew, probably. It's pretty similar because they've been reading the same books that were written in that language. So I think it keeps the language static.
Yeah.
Maybe Egypt. I don't know that to be true. But Egypt has had the same name for 5,000 years. Mm-hmm. You know? So I wonder if they are speaking a similar dialect. Now, English, we're not even speaking the same English that we spoke 150 years ago.
Yeah.
It changes so rapidly. It's constantly evolving. So, and that's most languages, I think. They just evolve. Each generation adds something new. You know, every generation makes a little bit their own. And you guys know that. You've got slang. I've got my generation slang. You know, I've got my own slang from my generation, you know. And that's how, like, you know who you're talking to, is if I tell somebody something's rad and they're like, yeah, it is. I'm like, all right, this guy gets me. You know?
And then the other people are like, what?
Yeah, really, what are you talking about? I'm like, huh? It's a millennial thing. So. Yeah. So, great question. I don't actually know, but I think maybe Hebrew is pretty similar just because of
the text
that was passed down for years and years and years.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe colloquially, like the like people that live in Israel that are just like at the grocery store, you know, maybe or like, you know, just like, you know, post office or whatever. Maybe they're not talking like this. Maybe they have, but I don't know. I haven't been there.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I guess that wraps up another episode. This is the last episode of 2023.
Wow.
Yep. We won't be back until next year.
Dang.
Yes.
The year has gone by really, really fast.
I know, right? Listen, the older you get, the faster it goes. And I used to say all the time when, like, at work, I was like, how can the weeks and months go by so fast when every day is the longest day of my life?
I know. You know? Like, it's like each day is like so long, but like whenever you look back, you're like, wait, that was 2 months ago?
How did it get to be November?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, all right. Well, thank you so much, students, for listening. Thank you, Serenity and Lucy, for hanging out with me today and talking about the Tower of Babel. Thank you so much, Audrey, for editing out all of our long pauses. And thank you, students who are listening. I really appreciate everyone who listens. It makes me feel like I'm not, this isn't a vanity project. So, all right, students, we will see you next time.